Thank you.
Have any questions about anything? Well, where you'll be. Mr. Willing, I plan to return to New Zealand. Time is something that you have to try and understand. Generally, people are not very aware of the significance of the passing of time. Srimad Bhagavatam is stated by Lord Kapila that just like a mass of clouds is unaware of the wind, you know, any moment the wind can blow and some nice big puffy white clouds just disappear. So just as the clouds are unaware of the power of the wind to blow at any moment and dissipate them, similarly, the living entity in illusion is unaware of the power of time, which is constantly changing and transforming all material things. All material affairs. What is our big problem in life? Okay. What is our big problem? Harry, what's the big problem?
We believe too much in the Lord.
You believe too much in
the illusion.
And more precisely? Yeah. Our big problem, we don't think about it. We're forced to take birth, forced to get old, sick, and die. This is actually a disease. These four things constitute a disease. I know it's a different kind of thinking that you're accustomed to. I'm sure you're not accustomed to thinking of birth, death, disease, and old age as a disease. Means you can do something about it. Like I have, my ears are a bit clogged, I get a ringing sound in my ears, so much flying screws up the pumping inside your ear that gets down here. So I can take something and the homeopathic stuff, just slow it out and squirt it up my nose. Hopefully the condition will be alleviated. Well, similarly, we have to do something about repeated birth and death. But who thinks like that? What in society is encouraging you to do something about the fact that you are forced to take birth, forced to get old, you're forced to get sick, and you're forced to die? Who's thinking like that? When you go up to people and ask them, what's your occupation? How do you know? Well, I'm a graphic arts designer, I'm a nurse, or I'm a this, or I'm a that. How many people will tell you my occupation is to cure the disease of repeated birth and death? That's actually the main occupation in life. But people are anxious to do so many other things. Travel, relationships, family, society, money making. But you ask them, please, what are you doing to conquer over the disease of material existence? They look at you like you're crazy. The disease of material existence. What do you mean? Tooth decay or sore throat or yeah, cancer or AIDS or just like now in New Zealand they have the daffodil there. And that was the national bank for that. So some of the enterprise takes part. So you can buy a raffle ticket to win some groceries. $2 for one ticket, $5 for two tickets. And you can buy the daffodil, you get two daffodils, a plastic daffodil. Yes. All right, we're not criticizing. The fact that people don't want to suffer cancer, not criticizing. If I had cancer, yeah, I would be grateful for whatever help the Daffodil Society could give, the Cancer Society could give. But it's not our ultimate problem. Solving a particular disease is not the ultimate problem. The ultimate problem is how to solve all diseases. The whole disease of material existence, which includes four components, one of which is disease, the other is birth, death, old age.
How do you cure that?
Where's the day for celebrating that? We should start it. Start a day for that. Lotus Day or something. Except we can't have raffles, that's the answer. You can find something. Or reminding people that the real beauty in life is to conquer the disease of material existence. But you're not taught that by society. You're not taught that in school. Your families don't teach it. How many of you had mothers and fathers who told you, my dear son, my dear daughter, your goal in life is to cure the disease of material existence? Anyone here have parents that like that? No. In Israel, do the parents say like this? Yeah, I was telling you that. It is really trained very thoroughly, all the children, to be prepared to die for the country. All the men have to spend time in the army. Not the ladies, just the men. The ladies have to go to the army. Really? Ever, you went to the army? That's why you married him. Now you married him just to get out of the army. Huh? Huh? Can we tap you now? Now the truth comes out. Let's see. 2 weeks after you met you.
And the kid gets out of the army.
Huh?
Now
tell us, in which order were you thinking, you know? That you saw a lady out of the army first, or you saw, oh, this is the person I want first? Oh, later you realize you actually like them. So you met in the army.
When we were going to the army.
And so how did you contact each other? My grocery store. You all looked at each other and said, let's get out of the army. That wasn't a question of any kind of marriage plan at that point. You just figured you're both suitable persons how to conspire with each other to get out of the army.
No, I couldn't say it was the army. I'm going to say, I'm married. I can't get out of the army.
Cannot.
No.
Ah, so you had mercy on her. You had
mercy. Please, please, Mr. Stranger. Put it out of arms.
Let's get to the real truth here. That sounds very interesting. How much did you victimize this poor man? I get to see now. He was minding his own business in the store. Yeah. Trying to do his mundane material duty. And then you came up to him and you bewildered him, right? Because you wanted to get out of the army, right? Right? That first moment at the grocery store, you offered.
No.
You were love for 2 weeks. Even from the very first night, huh?
Yeah.
So 2 weeks later, she said, "Yeah, will you marry me?"
Well, it wasn't like that. Because her other friend, best friend, offered to marry her, but she got up and said, "No, no, what will
you say?" You said that, and she said,
"No, no, I didn't want someone else to marry her."
So you had to quickly make a move, right? After knowing her for 2 weeks, you know. Did such things happen in New Zealand? Married after 2 weeks, telling each other?
Well, the army makes people do crazy things.
So you were dating her for 2 weeks or calling her for 2 weeks? Mm-hmm. And then she told you, "Hey, somebody wants to marry me to get me out of the army." When he said, "No, no, 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 not him, me, I'll get you out."
Oh.
Yeah. So, but at that point, were both of you thinking that this is going to be the real thing, or you're just kind of...
No, just temporary, not saying something that afterwards we found out the government that was recognized as a man.
Why?
Because it's made by a lawyer, not a rabbi.
But it got around the army, though.
Well, she sent around 1,000 letters to her officers and said, "Better girls, you don't want to hear about
it." So, how much time after the first meeting in the grocery shop did you realize that actually this could be a real man? No. You said you married for 2 weeks. And you did that. At that time, you weren't thinking this could be the real thing. Right. You did. Were you thinking at first that this is after 2 weeks? You know, this was it, or this is the? You think maybe, but anyway, I need to get out of the army or what? Two years later, now the truth comes out. 2 years later. But you really didn't fully understand until 2 years later.
You know, then. The mind always wants to try more, see more, to know more, and yeah.
But how did you do that? I mean, although you were married legally, you were still, exploring your options.
The one, after I
was talking
to the army,
you canceled the marriage. Who did that? You or him?
That we were bonfire in the backyard and then the
bacon. That's canceling the marriage?
Because it wasn't really just meant nothing.
It wasn't
legal.
It wasn't a major commitment and position to get out of the army. This was just it wasn't like We didn't want to meet for each other for lunch. That came later.
Oh, I see. And then what did you do? You gathered all the ashes of the burnt papers together? Did you?
It was so happy, though. It was such a good kid.
How long ago was it?
Years.
That's a long time. So, so were you thinking at that time? How old were you when you met the grocery store? Wait a minute. And you were how old? Yeah. Were you thinking? You must conquer, repeat your birth and death. This is my point about the society that we're living in. No one is getting any impetus to solve their real problems. No one is getting any counseling to even understand what the real problems are. What are you told the real problems are? So you're an educator. What are the real problems supposed to be? Did you know what the explicit motto of the New Zealand's Department of Education is about? Ministry of Education, know what it is? I've seen it. The explicit motto is education for increasing people's economic development. That's the explicit purpose of the Ministry of Education. In other words, the purpose of education is to make more money. Now, if you had to analyze your life in terms of how you're solving the disease of material existence, how would you rate yourself? Can we ask any of our new faces? What is your name? This one. I haven't seen you the first time. Now.
How would I rate that I'm doing something very
good? Yeah, how you're curing the disease of material existence. How can you stop being afraid? How can someone stop being afraid unless you have knowledge? Fear is based on lack of understanding. But if you have no knowledge of who we are and why we're suffering, how will we stop fearing? Walking down the street and someone attacks you with a big knife, what the hell is an option? Whether I should fear or not? You'd be afraid. You would be afraid.
You would be afraid, yeah. Then the next time that you go down the street.
No, but the next time?
The next time you go down the street.
No, someone is about to finish you off. You'd be afraid.
Yeah,
because
it's a very immediate
thing. Well, life is full of immediate things like that. Yeah?
Yeah, but I think 90% of our fear is not immediate fear. Fear of things that have happened already, or maybe will happen to other people that fear. You will probably think about those things that might happen to them, might not be there. you can get one movie
that can
the other
stuff. Well, there's no doubt that old age and death will come. So, what to do about that? Should we be afraid of that?
Well, you should be fearful
of old age and death, because if you have to, you don't know what it's about and have no solution, you should be fearful.
What should be afraid of being old?
All your pleasure goes away. Even your imaginary pleasure of youth goes away. Old age, all pleasure fades. Your body is painful. Have you ever been very sick?
Yes.
In the hospital?
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's old age. Generally speaking.
Yeah, but say that all of them, as a people
don't make it,
say
that all of them. But what is the use simply of having a long life without knowledge? The trees are living a long time. Still didn't have a long life. A long life is no great achievement. Better to have a short life. But to have a life of knowledge. There's a verse in Srimad Bhagavatam. Who said that? Shukadeva Goswami. What is the value of prolonged life wasted by years of inexperience? Better a short life and just have a few moments of Krishna consciousness. So I'm teaching you a completely different way of looking at things. Number one, a material existence is a disease. Number two, there's nothing so great about having a long life if it's ignorant. Better a short life with full knowledge. Because even with a few moments of full knowledge, you can attain perfection, even if your life is short. And naturally, at the time of death, you'll be fearful because you don't know where you're heading, what's coming next, if anything. So we have to think about these things. That is how to seriously approach life. Most people ever don't think about these things. They're busy with so many other things. Accumulating possessions, accumulating relationships. Although everyone is a puppet of time in material existence, still, they're very active accumulating things. Have you ever gone to the beach and made things in the sand? Any of you done that? You took it very seriously. What were your parents thinking? Little children playing, making houses in the sand. You were very serious about it. Your parents knew, though, that in the evening we'll go home. That'll be the end of the sand castle. The waves will come in and wash. The sand castles away. Why can't we see our present activities in that way? We're building castles of sand. We have hopes. There'll be happiness and fulfillment. But the tide is going to come in and sweep everything away. I always like to say how once my father, he's quite a materialistic guy. was a devoted reader of Playboy magazine. He really accepted all those values you had. He considered, I guess, pretty tame these days, but back in the 50s and 60s, it was like, you know, the cutting edge of hedonism. You know, the men just on their suit jackets, they wear these lapel buttons of a bunny, Playboy bunny. Everybody would think you're cool. So, he called me once, you know, purpose of life is just to leave some tracks in the sand behind you when you're gone. Just leave some tracks in the sand. So, I was just a little kid when he said that. I pointed out to him, what does it matter to you if you're gone, whether there are tracks in the sand or not? You're gone, and where are you? Doesn't matter. Just leave some tracks behind in the sand. And of course, the tracks don't last in the sand. So here we have a situation. Number one, the tracks don't last. Number two, the person's gone. Where he or she has gone, who knows? So this is meant to be light. In Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says a very interesting thing. He explains that that which is real has no beginning and end. In other words, something that has a beginning and end is not actually real. It exists, but it's not real. Something that is real has no beginning and end. We can apply that to pleasure. Real pleasure has no beginning and end. Something that is false pleasure has a beginning and end. It exists, but it's false. Can you understand how false things can exist? Just like a mirage exists. A dream exists. A shadow exists. Yeah, a shadow exists, but should you try to chase the shadow of my hand? The shadow exists, but it's false. It's not the substance. It's not the reality. So that which is false, Krishna explains in Bhagavad Gita, has a beginning and end. That which is real has no beginning or end. Real pleasure has no beginning and end. False pleasure, illusory pleasure, has a beginning and end. It exists, but it's false. Just like a reflection or an hallucination, a reflection, shadow. All those things exist, but they're false. You understand? Therefore, we say that what people are pursuing as happiness is false, but the falsity exists. You understand? False things exist, even though they're false. It's like the shadow exists, but the shadow is not the real hand. The shadow is false. A reflection of something is not the real thing. It's false, but it exists. A hallucination exists, but it's false. A different way of looking at life. So Krishna explains in Bhagavad Gita that that which is real has no beginning or end. That's the kind of pleasure you lose. And you won't truly be satisfied until you get that kind of pleasure. If you keep trying to grasp shadows and reflections and hallucinations, you'll spend your whole life in falsity, chasing things that have a beginning and end. However, if you orientate your life for connecting to spiritual pleasure, then you're situated in reality. Just like a disease, when you have a fever. You ever felt the waves of a fever? Or when you have a toothache. Just throbs and throbs and throbs. Similarly, the false desires for material enjoyment, they come in waves. Even though you may intellectually know that this is not correct, this is not real, because of the disease condition. Disease is like that. You can try to enjoy a disease condition, right? Have you ever tried to enjoy a disease condition? Never?
Enjoy.
A disease condition.
I think you call it a class of disease condition.
Very good. Very good. You get a gold star. But even in the conventional sense, when you were sick, did you ever try to enjoy that condition?
I tried to be okay with it.
You didn't try to enjoy it, though. Or did you ever try to enjoy while you were sick?
Yeah.
What did you try to do?
Enjoy life. Enjoy being
while you were sick?
Yeah. So I guess when you're sick, you're more aware of your fragility. So you're more aware that you're less fit. So you're saying, well, I'm going to enjoy experience for it.
So you were like burning with a fever, and yeah, but still you tried to get out and rave or something.
Enjoyment.
Huh? Just about going out and raving. No, I don't. Whatever, you know.
Enjoy looking out the window.
So you were burning with a fever, and you looked out the window and
oh, look at this guy, so pretty.
You did that.
Yeah.
Remember I told you about when there was the SARS scare? I told you, I'm sure, I saw a picture of people in Hong Kong raving at a disco with masks over there. You know, that was around, you know, searching the masks. Yeah. Yeah, that was, they all were wearing these white masks, you know, so they wouldn't get SARS. So you all recognize that's ridiculous, but what about trying to enjoy while you're in a diseased condition of material existence, as you said it was? Anyone else remember when you were sick trying to enjoy? Yeah, what did you do?
I was in the hospital
Yeah.
I'm supposed to be doing it.
I told you what I would do when I was a little kid. I had a fever. I used to love having a fever. Because, number one, it meant no school. Number two, it meant ice cream. My mother was a nurse, so she knew that to help bring down the fever. You feed the kids ice cream. And generally when I got sick, my brother would get sick too because we shared the same room. But we would both get to stay home from school. And my mother would serve us ice cream. And it was just a wonderful feeling of having a burning hot tongue and ice cold ice cream, you know, on your tongue. Just think of that. Mouth is burning, fever, your tongue is burning. And then ice cold ice cream sliding down your hot throat. Always remember that. Does that sound like pleasure to you? Yeah? Why not? Does it sound like pleasure to you? But can you imagine burning hot throat and tongue and something cold sliding down your throat? What's that?
Yeah, I can imagine.
And your mother taking care of you all day, you know? You're laying in bed, your mother taking care of you. The only bad part was when she got too sick, she called the doctor to give you an injection. That was the bad part. They did your injection in the wrong. Otherwise, the ice cream was great. Now, what are you all thinking? You're thinking, hey, yeah, okay, so it felt good that the ice cream is sliding down your hot throat, but you've got a fever. Get well. Right? So that's what we're saying about material existence. So what if you get some good stimulation from this or that? You've got a disease. Material existence. Get well. You say, no. I'm having some good times. Past weekend, you know. I haven't had a time like that in many years. But you're in a disease condition. You've got the fever of material existence. Yeah, so what? I'm having some good sensations. So we have to think about how we're living. What's the purpose of our life? To help us understand what is the purpose of life, Krishna speaks Bhagavad Gita, what he says. That which is real has no beginning or end. That which is unreal, in terms of false, has a beginning and end. But it does exist. False things do exist. The false things have a beginning and end.
Thank you.
chapter 5, Karma Yoga, Action in Krishna Consciousness, text 22. Yei samsparsha ja bhoga yoga yonaya eva te aryam samanta kaunteya tateshu ramate buddha. Yei samsparsha ja bhoga
yei samsparsha ja bhoga
yukha yonaya eva te
yukha yonaya eva te
aryam samanta kaunteya Tateshu Ramate Buddha
Tateshu Ramate Buddha
Yehi Samsparsha Jabhoga
Yehi Samsparsha Jabhoga
Dukkha Yonaya Evate
Dukkha Yonaya Evate
Adyanta Vanta Kaunteya
Adyanta Vanta Kaunteya
Tateshu Ramate Buddha
Tateshu Ramate Buddha
Yehi samsparsha ja bhoga
Yehi samsparsha ja bhoga
Dukkha yonaya eva te
Dukkha yonaya eva te
Adyanta vanta kaunteya
Adyanta vanta kaunteya
Tateshu ramate buddha
Tateshu ramate buddha
Yehi samsparsha ja bhoga
Yehi samsparsha ja bhoga
Dukkha yonaya eva te
Dukkha yonaya eva te
Adyanta vanta kaunteya
Adyanta vanta kaunteya
Tateshu ramate buddha
Tateshu ramate buddha
Yehi
samsparsha ja bhoga
Dukkha yonaya
eva te
Adyanta vanta kaunteya
Adyanta vanta kaunteya
Tateshu ramate buddha
Tateshu ramate buddha
Yehi samsparsha ja bhoga
Yehi samsparsha ja bhoga
Dukkha yonaya
eva te
Adyanta vanta
kaunteya Adyanta vanta
kaunteya An intelligent person does not take part in the sources of misery, which are due to contact with the material senses. Such pleasures have a beginning and end, and so the wise man does not delight in them. Think about that. How can someone agree to enjoy false pleasure? How do you like that judgment to be made upon your life? You have agreed to enjoy false pleasure. Just like when babies are screaming and hollering, often what do mothers give them? Yeah. Sometimes they call it a pacifier. So, in material existence, when the conditioned souls are screaming,
screaming and hollering for, satisfying their temporary material senses. Material nature offers them a dummy, a pacifier. Now, does the pacifier or the dummy really solve the baby's problem? No. It's just an illusion. You get the baby to shut up. The baby sucks and sucks and sucks, thinking the baby's, you know, the baby thinks it's, you know, relieving its problems just by the sucking activity, even though nothing is coming. Similarly, human beings think that they're solving their problem by gratifying their senses, although no juice is coming, no nectar is coming. So just think about that. Next time you encounter the objects of still enjoyment, think about the dummy or the pacifier. Nothing really comes. It's suck and suck, the baby just sucking. Oh, this is so nice. Sucking. You know, nothing's coming. Same with human beings, they struggle hard to gratify their senses, although no lasting taste is there. They're habituated to acting in that way, even though the taste is not there. No substantial taste is there. So just think about it. Knowing well the joys of transcendental pleasure, how can a liberated soul agree to enjoy false pleasure? Can you see yourself doing that? Agree to enjoy false pleasure? Signing on a dotted line. Yes, yes, I agree to enjoy false pleasure. Please reflect on that last statement. The more one is addicted to material pleasures, the more he is entrapped by material misery. How can that be so? Okay, we may admit material pleasures, they may be false, they may be temporary, but how is it that they result in our being entrapped by material miseries? This is the ignorance that people have difficulty coping with. All right, I know material pleasure, not all it's advertised to be. Still, whatever, you know, you gotta do something. You can't just, you know, sit around your house Friday, Saturday night. You gotta, you know, let your senses go wild, you know. Some degree anyway. A few hours anyway. No one sees the end result that by these so-called pleasurable activities, you become entrapped by material miseries. People don't understand that you can't have one without the other. You cannot have material pleasures without material miseries. It's like a coin has to have two sides. The more you pursue the temporary material pleasures, the more you get material miseries. If you want to stop material misery, then you have to stop your pursuit of material pleasure. Material pleasures produce bodily identification or reinforce bodily misidentification. I am this body, that becomes reinforced in your pursuit of the zero question. The more you think you are the body, the more you suffer. Material activities for pleasure deepen your body identification, and then, because the body inevitably means suffering, because you identify so much with it, you suffer so much. If someone saw your jumper lying somewhere and they came with a razor blade and slit the sleeve, you would be disturbed. What do you do that for? But you would like, you know, you wouldn't like, you know, be hysterical with shock, you know? But if someone came and slit your body, oh! As you said, immediate fear. Because of the body identification. But actually the body is just like a garment. Just explain that. Second chapter 28. Just like you change your clothes, you change your body. We don't identify with our clothes as intensely as we identify with the body. Body identification is increased by activities of material sense pleasure. There's a price you pay for all that. You don't get away scot-free. Yeah, I know it's not the greatest, but it's something to do, you know. Friday and Saturday night, you know. What else are you supposed to do in this world? I mean, you have these bodies. I know it's not the greatest. I know it's not like what the movies say. Anyway. Say that as you may like, but you'll pay a price. The price is that you'll be entrapped by material miseries because of the increased body identification that results from these activities. So in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna wants to save you from trouble. After he's speaking this verse, the Supreme Personality of Godhead is speaking this verse. An intelligent person does not take part in the sources of misery, which are due to contact with the material senses of Sama Kunti. Such pleasures have a beginning and end, and so the wise man does not delight in them. I hope that makes sense to you. Notice that Krishna is saying that certain things are the sources of misery. The sources of misery are produced when material senses contact material sense of. They are sources of misery because such things are transitory. They have a beginning and end. They just disturb you. They come and they go. Maybe some of you have done something or been in an experience which came and went, and even though it might be what some people call pleasure, because it came and went, it was actually a disturbance. Okay, right? Talk about what happened? I remember some experience that is what people conventionally call pleasure, but because it just came and went, it actually was a disturbance, like a shooting star in the sky, or a comet, appeared and disappeared.
Off the mountain, come down the mountain, and you go up the mountain, come back down. What picture is
that? Run up and down the mountain?
Skiing. You take a lift up and skiing.
So how did you feel that it was disturbance?
You don't have much people to try and enjoy what they're doing.
So much effort to try.
trying to complete your own.
So when you finished at the end of the day, you felt, which I think that it is. A little. What about the other part besides the little bit? Like reading a fresh air. Exhilarating feeling of going downhill.
Huh?
Oh, that was amazing.
It's getting kind of difficult.
Huh?
It's getting kind of
difficult. I'm sure some of you have these experiences that hit you like a flash and then it's gone and you think, oh, well, better I would have done without that. Maybe some kind of relationship or so-called love affair hits you like, wow, and it's gone. I thought you were going to tell us before. Do you have money from the army? Same thing in New Zealand. They call it the OE, the Overseas Experience. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama. Hare Hare.
Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna.